Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today is day 28 of the Season of the Witch, and today we're talking about one of my favorite subgenres of horror, the slasher film. Now, I know that I've probably talked about the best-known slasher franchises, or at least some of the most iconic, but the thing about slasher films is there are a shit ton of them, especially after Halloween through the 80s. However, slasher is still coming out to this day. And I think one part of that is that slashers can be done for really cheap. Not to say that they're all cheaply made or that they're cheap movies, but you don't need to have big movie stars. You don't need to have a huge budget in order to make a slasher movie. And slashers are a subgenre that has persisted despite criticism from many people. But if you want to really look at where slasher movies came from, you probably would have to look at the precursors of the slasher, such as movies like Peeping Tom and Psycho from 1960, and the giallo films in Italy, which are more like murder mysteries. But a lot of the tropes and a lot of the way of shooting through the cinematic language of the slasher movie comes from those movies. And that's not to say that they're all that, because Peeping Tom and Psycho are these really great movies. I think probably the last proto-slasher, right before the slasher movie really kind of became a thing, was Black Christmas. And you could argue that it was actually the first slasher film. But most people trace slashers back to Halloween. And Halloween's great, and I've talked about Michael Myers and Halloween, and I've talked about Friday the 13th and Jason Voorhees, and I've already talked about Freddy Krueger and Nightmare on Elm Street. I've also talked about such random slasher movies as Sleepaway Camp or the movies that revitalized the slashers in the 90s, like Scream, or its imitators like I Know What You Did Last Summer. But as I said, the slasher genre exploded, and especially between 1978 and 1984, there was tons of slashers. I think there was maybe 100 slashers, at least 100 slashers released in the 1980s alone. That's not including the glut of slashers that came out in the wake of the success of Halloween, of the first Halloween movie. And, of course, the franchises that they spawned, because it wasn't just these iconic movies. You can argue that Child's Play is a slasher movie, and that was a genre. There was some of the movies I'm going to talk about today. They actually led to genres as well. Even something like Scream, which in and of itself was a loving tribute and also kind of a send-up of slasher movies, a smart send-up at least, and pointing out the tropes of them, still ended up falling into the into a franchise because of its popularity, and also even kind of having the same issues that most franchises have. Now, for the uninitiated, slasher movies really have just a couple of things in common. Most of them deal with a group of teenagers or young people that we follow who are being stalked by a killer who usually uses some kind of bladed instrument. Now, they don't always use a bladed instrument, and the killer themselves can be just a regular person who's out for revenge, someone who's been scorned, who wants to get people back that did something to them. There could be a supernatural element sometimes. It could be a group of people. It could be something that you don't expect. And the great thing about slashers is that it's almost like kind of having these bones of a film that you start with and then just adding to it whatever you want. And due to that, you get some really fucking weird tangents and you get these really interesting movies. And you get some utter shit. And I should probably back all that, because I love slasher movies, but I don't want to put them on a pedestal. Slasher movies are usually cheap. They're usually just a bunch of violence, and it's usually you just enjoying either someone trying to figure out who the killer is, but more likely than not, you're watching people get killed, and that's part of the fun. That's not to say that slashers can't be inventive in how they do gore and how they shoot sequences, or even in the logical inconsistencies and the leaps of logic you have to do in order for the story to make some sort of sense. I think slashers, because of that, are easy to make fun of, but slashers are fun at the end of the day. These aren't movies that are going to set the world on fire. They're not movies that are going to elevate horror necessarily. And who the fuck needs to elevate horror anyway? I mean, part of the appeal of horror is that it can be down in the gutter and really kind of get to the nitty gritty because no one's going to see it coming. Also, part of the fun, I think, of slashers is the promotion of them. Some of the trailers for slasher movies are some of the best, like The Burning, for example, where the trailer was I think, the inspiration for the made-up trailer Don't by Edgar Wright in Grindhouse. And sometimes the trailer itself will kind of play off the mystery, or they'll just give away the whole fucking movie. And in the end, it doesn't matter because the majority of slashers are just these cash grabs, and in those cash grabs, you sometimes get these interesting ideas, and you sometimes just get, like, these fun movies that are a joy to watch, especially if you enjoy watching movies that are kind of shitty or that come up with some really ridiculous gore. Now, as I mentioned, I kind of talked about the major slasher movies. I already talked about Halloween and Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Scream. You could probably even throw in something like, like Black Christmas in there. These are all movies I've talked about. But as I said, there's plenty to choose from. So we're going to talk about some of these other movies. And the first I wanted to talk about is Tourist Trap from 1979, a movie that's rated PG of all things. And it's actually one of the better slashers of this subgenre, one of the better entries of the subgenre. And I think part of that is it's kind of inventive. So we basically start off with this Texas Chainsaw Massacre sort of intro where we're following this group of friends as they come upon a tourist trap, like this place that has these wax figures, these mannequins. It's also kind of a rest stop, but little do they know that the proprietor of the place is fucking nuts, and also he's got telekinetic powers because why the fuck not? This is a slasher. If you want to throw in supernatural elements that don't actually make sense, it makes perfect sense for this type of movie. So if you want to do that, go right ahead. And so we have this group of people who are set upon not only by this psycho killer, but also by him setting these mannequins upon them. And part of it is played for laughs. Well, a lot of it is played for laughs. And in that, I think some of the horror elements come out. I'm not saying that this is a very, like, frightening movie or that it's going to scare the shit out of you or anything like that, but that's the interplay. So you have this comedic take. I was like, oh, it's a tourist attraction. They're fucking with you. But then at the same time, you have this person who is out to get these group of kids and kill them. So it makes for this interesting dichotomy. And much like some of these movies, you might end up with a final girl, but she might end up so psychologically scarred that it leads to them not really surviving. I mean, they're surviving, they're alive, but not much else. And that's another thing about the slasher movies is that they have this trope of the final girl. And it's not to say it's always a final girl or it is literally just one, but I think it really goes back to Laurie Strode, as I talked about when I talked about Halloween, and her being almost the antagonist or the protagonist, really, to the antagonist of Michael Myers in that movie. And we always end up kind of having this final girl, as Sidney Prescott in the Scream movies, Nancy and later Alice in Friday the 13th, in Jason. In the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, we have, I guess, Tommy Jarvis would be the closest that we have to a final girl or the final guy in this particular case in the Jason movies, at least through the middle of those movies. Although these franchises kind of grow, and outside of Halloween, really kind of having Laurie almost present in more than half of those entries. Most of the time, it's kind of fluid, and these franchises kind of go on and on. But you know, speaking of Jamie Lee Curtis, she herself actually ended up kind of becoming the go-to actress for slasher movies, and it's interesting because I don't think that that was the career path that she kind of set out for herself. But I mean, that's what happened, and that's not to say that Jamie Lee Curtis is just a scream queen. She's definitely someone that is very entrenched in horror, but she's done a lot of other stuff, and she's a great actress. And it's just interesting to see her being the daughter of Janet Leigh, who was in Psycho. That both are synonymous with horror to a certain extent for Janet Leigh, and to a much, much bigger extent with Jamie Lee Curtis. But as I was saying, you know, Halloween was kind of her big break, and it led to these offers for movies that were in the same vein. Movies like 1980s Terror Train. Terror Train, which is basically just a Halloween ripoff, let's step on a train. But Terror Train does have this interesting idea where we have this group of kids who are, they're kids, and these college students who are as freshmen, they pull a prank that goes totally wrong and leads to one of the people ending up in an insane asylum. 3 years later, this person comes out of the insane asylum, and on their graduation party, which for some reason is a costume party on a train, because why the fuck not, starts killing the people that wronged him. And the cool thing about that is that the killer, ends after he kills somebody, he takes on their costume. So we kind of get this visual difference in the killer. So that's like an interesting little wrinkle, something different within what you would expect for a slasher movie. And like I said, to be fair, I mean, this is really just Halloween, except on a train. But even within that, you know, you can change stuff enough where the movie becomes memorable. And part of that is kind of having this idea and also having Jamie Lee Curtis. But Terror Train is a fun movie to watch, and I've enjoyed it. I mean, if you've kind of gone through the ones that everyone thinks about, you can definitely check out Terror Train. Probably one of the other movies that actually came out the same year that Jamie Lee Curtis was in was Prom Night. And Prom Night also kind of has the same idea of, this time they're high school kids, not college kids, but they pull a prank, something goes wrong, in this case somebody dies, and now years later someone is coming back for revenge. And this is an idea that really comes back in a lot of slashers, is we have this victim who is wronged, and from there they decide to take on bloody revenge and avenge what happened to them by killing the people that did these things to them. And the funny thing is that most of these movies were not really on the side of the killer, even though they were wrong. It's sort of like kind of going back to that idea of the Giallo movie, where a lot of times those killers, while they're merciless, like usually something fucked up happened to them, and they're kind of almost responding to their own trauma. But before I, you know, elevate this up to something much higher than it is, it's really just an excuse for why they're doing what they're doing. And it's never really explained in a way where you really get to understand why someone would go to these lengths to do these things outside of the primal, yeah, like they fucked this person over. So, or, you know, I guess as the killer, like thinking, well, I got fucked over, so I'm going to get mine, sort of thing. But it really is, it's a very surface level sort of reading of that trauma that would lead to someone to have a psychotic break and lead to that, or someone witnessing somebody, usually a family member. There's a lot of ideas like with twins or with siblings coming back and avenging the death of the person that was killed because somebody done fucked up. But yeah, like it's this almost, it's this interesting idea that's really never, in most of these movies, is never really followed up on it, and it really is almost just this idea of like, yeah, let's just kind of, this is the reason, don't fucking bother thinking about it too hard. Don't you want to see these cool like ways of impaling people with a knife, or you know, fill in the blank weapon? But like I said, that's part of the what's the appeal of these movies. Another one is just the crazy ideas that they end up implementing for what is going to be the weapon that of choice of the killer, which brings me to 1982's The Slumber Party Massacre, wherein we have this group of students who are having a slumber party, as it's stated, and there's a deranged psychotic killer who breaks out of an insane asylum, and he's wielding a power drill. And this is probably a reference to 1979's Driller Killer, which also inspired the name of the heavy metal band, and probably was somewhat responsible for Driller Killer by Necromantics as well, although I think that's about a dentist, but regardless, you know, I'm sure that at least the name was. But yeah, even to think that something like a drill, a power drill, isn't something that was only used in one movie, it's used in multiple movies. And the Slumber Party Massacre is, it's cheesy, but it somehow was popular enough that I think there's like four of them, at least four of them that I could think of off the top of my head. So that's fucking crazy that you have this silly idea of a psychotic killer with a power drill, and that leads to plenty of movies. And as I mentioned, that isn't even the only movie where somebody has a power drill, which is nuts in and of itself. Now, another movie that has kind of an interesting take on the slasher is The Burning from 1981, where we have basically gardening shears as the weapon of choice, or hedge clippers. I mean, they're these giant scissors, really, and they're used to stab people. But The Burning kind of goes back to this idea of somebody being wronged. In this case, it's almost like, it really, to me, feels like this different take on Friday the 13th, where we have this camp caretaker who is burned, hence The Burning, by a prank that goes wrong by some of the people at the summer camp. When they return, he enacts bloody revenge. This movie's weird in that this is one of the few slasher movies where there's, that I can think of at least, where there's like extended like sex scenes. Like, it's gratuitous. Like, that's another element of these movies. They're very exploitative. Lots of sex and violence, lots of nudity. But usually in most of these movies, the sex is almost part of why they get killed, which leads to this kind of weird morality, but that really isn't always the case. But there's like just these straight up like love scenes, I guess. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. I was just like, what the fuck am I watching here? Like, why is this going on for 5 minutes where these people are like obviously making out and fucking? And I'm like, it's disturbing in another way, because it's almost like voyeuristic more so than, I don't know, like I'm thinking something like in Halloween where like, oh, you're sexy, let's fuck. And then like 5 seconds later, Michael Myers shows up and like chops her head off or something. This is just goes on forever. And I was like, okay. So there's that to watch out for when watching this movie, just in the sense of, and not to say that this is the only movie that does that, but this was one where I just really felt gratuitous. And I'm probably exaggerating by saying that this, like, one of the sequences is like 5 minutes long. It just felt like it dragged on forever. And part of it is just, it was so awkward. Like, I'm talking Night Owl, Silk Spectre in Zack Snyder's Watchmen movie levels of awkward, like, sex scene. And I don't remember what the song was, but it was as oddly placed as Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah in that particular sequence. But, you know, you also get people getting slapped, getting stabbed with gardening shears, so there's that. Now, as I keep kind of going back to, there's tons and tons and tons of slasher movies, and there's plenty of people that that enjoy these movies. Quentin Tarantino's favorite slasher is My Bloody Valentine from 1981, a movie that is, part of the interesting thing about it is that you don't ever really get to see a good look at the killer, or you don't want to, well, which I guess is for most of these movies, but you have, in this one, it kind of makes sense. We have people in this mining town, so this guy's in full on, like, mining gear and using a pickaxe and different mining equipment to kill people, and it's related to this, to this local legend having to do with Valentine's Day, although it really doesn't have anything to do with that. This is a movie that I don't really want to kind of get into, because I don't want to spoil some of it, because it's so outlandish, but it's definitely a fun one. I mean, this is an also movie, one of the few slasher movies that was remade somewhat successfully. My Bloody Valentine was remade as My Bloody Valentine 3D in 2009. And that was starring, I think, Jensen Eccles from Supernatural. And, this is part of the 3D sort of, well, this is actually, I think, might have been the first horror movie that was made during that time period, when 3D all of a sudden became this huge thing after Avatar, or right around the release of Avatar. And 3D sucks, as I've said before, but this is kind of a fun one, and this is almost a throwback where you have, like, you know, pickaxes going at you into the audience, so it's like, oh, I'm getting stabbed with a pickaxe sort of thing. And but the source, that, and if you're going to watch any, either one, I would say watch the original. It's a lot more fun. Another movie that came out that year of 1981 is Graduation Day, which I like just because that's the year I was born, and it's the class of 81. This movie is really fucking weird, because we have this killer who is taking out people who are athletes. So there's all these jokes related to their prowess as athletes and them getting killed. The central idea has to do with the death of, like, sports are such a big thing in this high school that one of the runners ended up actually dying after winning a race because she was pushing herself too hard. And the guy, I don't remember if it was her, I believe it was her brother. It might have been her boyfriend. It was her boyfriend. her boyfriend is getting revenge on everybody for allowing that to happen, including the coaches. And this one goes to even crazier extremes because we have this guy who still wants to marry this dead woman and has dug up her corpse and is keeping it psycho style in his bedroom as it's starting to decay and desiccate. And this movie's not great, but just the lengths of how fucking weird it goes, I think, make it interesting and make it worth checking out. Now, slasher movies didn't just come from America. I mean, the majority of them in this time period did, but we had, obviously, in Italy there was a ton, and other parts of Europe we also got some slasher movies. And, you know, since the 80s we've had slasher movies from lots of different places. But one of the weirdest ones, I think, is from Spain, which is known here as Pieces, and I actually have ever only known it as Pieces, although apparently the original title is Mil Gritos Tiene la Noche. But Pieces is, like, I always thought this movie was, like, from Italy, just from the way that it played. It plays like a giallo. It plays like a giallo where you have this weird backstory where you start off with this kid who kills his mother because she finds that he has, like, Playboys or some kind of, like, smut magazine like that. And then after he brutally kills his mother and, like, covers his whole room in blood and himself, he calls the police and then says that he walked in, slipped, and got blood and visceral over himself after his mom was killed. We flash forward to the future, or to the present, I should say, which, once again, this is kind of a regular trope for slasher movies, to a college campus in Boston. And little by little, we have these people that are getting killed. And once again, much like in giallo movies, we just have this, we see these gloved hands, or we see someone, the most that we see the killer is that they have a trench coat and are wearing a fedora or a trilby hat. I get the two mixed up all the damn time. Regardless, we don't ever get to see who it is. And we're following the police as they're trying to investigate who the killer could be, while also kind of just seeing these, for some reason, the police have one of the students help them out, because that makes a lot of sense. So we're also following that sort of trail as we also see a lot of women getting killed. And throughout it, we get these flashbacks to this kid's kind of upbringing. And as it turns out, the killer is the dean, and he's actually taking pieces from different women because he is basically stitching together, like, a human jigsaw puzzle of a woman. And it turns out it's the dean that's the killer. And, of course, in true horror movie fashion, of course, once you find out who the killer is, the killer gets stopped and he's killed. But this movie is so fucking weird. It has one final twist where this jigsaw woman comes alive like a zombie after the dean is killed, and she rips the dick off of one of the student that was helping the police in order to find out who this killer is. And this is where what I mean by slasher movie just kind of taking these weird fucking turns where all of a sudden things are supernatural for, like, no reason. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Maniac as well, which kind of has infamously has this scene. We're following this maniac killer who's killing hookers and keeping their bodies as like trophies and keeping mannequins, and then the mannequins become zombies and ripping him to pieces and cut him up and rip his head off. But turns out it's just a dream and he committed suicide. But then the guy's still alive. It's weird. I think that's part of the thing I like about slashers is that they have like the dream logic of a Dario Argento movie, except most of them are American as opposed to being from Italy. And one of the last ones I kind of wanted to talk about was 1982's The House on Sorority Row, which was remade in 2009 as well as simply Sorority Row. And I just bring that up because that's probably the best movie that Rumor Willis was ever in outside of a cameo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But The House on Sorority Row kind of just follows this whole idea of, a prank going wrong. In this case, these girls in a sorority, they decide to throw a party and their landlord wants to kick them out. So they are going to prank her, goes wrong. They end up, think they kill her, which they don't, but they leave her body in the pool. And then shenanigans start to appear because someone is always watching and someone always kind of is there to avenge these crazy things. House on Sorority Row is just a good example of a slasher movie, and I think it's one that many people just haven't seen, so I kind of wanted to spotlight it. And the last movie I wanted to talk about is 1986's April Fool's Day. April Fool's Day is probably one of the best and worst slasher movies that I've ever seen. I say best because it has these really intricate and really interesting ways of people getting killed off. But as the title implies, April Fools, it's all a joke. None of this actually happens. This is all an April Fool's Day prank on the audience. And while that might seem like a cheat, at least it has some interesting stuff going on before that. Now, I think slasher movies are a subgenre that can easily be made fun of just because we have this focus on not so much character development in a couple of them, but most of the time, we're really just kind of focusing on having this killer, having these kids that are there to be killed. And there's lots of elements of exploitation, lots of violence, lots of gore, usually definitely lots of nudity and or sex. And on top of it, implied nudity. And most of the actors in these movies are young, so they're good looking. So they definitely are just trying to kind of get our money. Or the producers are. I think there's also this idea, which is probably at least somewhat true, that they're misogynistic, even though, because a lot of times the victims are women, and the objects of desire end up being women in most of these movies as well. I think that's a bit reductive because some of the strongest female characters in horror come from slasher movies. Not all, and not that something like, The House on Sorority Row has like memorable characters, but that's something I think that you can lobby against basically any genre, not just horror and not just a slasher movie. But I think the slashers are also just inventive because they go out of their way to try different things, and maybe not necessarily out of their way, maybe they're just trying to work within the limits that they have. But it's also, I think, sometimes a way of commenting on things, much like much horror does, without kind of getting people's hackles up because they're so focused on the bloody violence that they're seeing on screen. I love slashers. I know they're definitely not for everybody, but I truly enjoy them. And if you've never seen a slasher, I mean, I think you definitely can't go wrong with some of the classics. Or, if you don't like watching old movies, you can definitely check out something more recent. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow.